This archived broadcast of Janet Meffer Today is brought to you by Provident Films and Affirm Films movie, Overcomer, coming to the small screen in time for Christmas. Overcomer, available December 17th on digital, Blu-ray, and DVD.
This is Janet Meffer Today.
Our confidence is in Christ alone.
Are we going to stand with God, come what may?
If the Word of God says it, I believe it.
And that's the way it is.
And now, here is Janet Meffer.
Thank you so much for joining us again. George Washington once said, "Let us therefore animate and encourage each other and show the whole world that a free man contending for liberty on his own ground is superior to any slavish mercenary on earth." Well, we owe our freedoms today to the men who fought the American Revolution and who drafted and signed the Declaration of Independence. But as my next guest points out, the real American Revolution, as John Adams called it, was the moral revolution that occurred in the minds of the people in the years leading up to 1776. So we will be discussing this today with C. Bradley Thompson, professor of political philosophy at Clemson University and the executive director of the Clemson Institute for the Study of Capitalism. His book is called America's Revolutionary Mind. So good to have you with us, Professor Thompson. How are you doing?
Hi, Janet. I'm fine. Nice to be with you today.
Thank you so much. You quote Thomas Paine as saying that our new government was founded on a moral theory, this indefeasible hereditary rights of man. Why is that such an important thing to understand as we're looking back at the American Revolution and the Declaration?
I think it's important to understand for us in the 21st century today because Jefferson and John Adams and America's founding fathers had a view of natural rights, rights that were absolute, certain, permanent, and universal. They did not think, like many college professors do today, that rights are given to us by government or that rights evolve over time.
Right.
Instead, the founding fathers believed that our rights are grounded in a permanent and universal nature. Which means then by implication, right, that the right, for instance, to liberty or property is something that has to be protected and promoted at all costs.
Yes, exactly right. So natural rights, we hear this, we have all heard this referenced when we went through history class in high school and so forth. Hopefully we did. And we all know about this. But I wonder how many Americans today really can talk about natural rights and natural law in the way that the founders understood it. Can you school us a little bit on that natural law, natural rights? What was the essence of those concepts?
Well, I think the fundamental idea for America's revolutionary founding fathers is, unlike their fellow Britons with whom they were contending in the 1760s and 1770s, the Americans did not think that rights were grounded in history. So their British interlocutors, for instance, believed in something called the rights of Englishmen, and that those rights are contingent on particular places, in this case England, and a particular time, in this case the 18th century. America's founding fathers realized that that was a shaky foundation on which to ground a permanent free society. So during the 1760s and 1770s, during the so-called years of the imperial crisis, they went in search of a more permanent, absolute foundation for their rights, one that would not evolve over time.
Right.
And they found that permanent foundation in the idea of nature. So they were students, all of America's founding fathers were students, for instance, of Sir Isaac Newton, the great 17th century English mathematician and scientist. And Newton, of course, had discovered the so-called scientific or natural laws of nature. And so America's founding fathers took this notion of laws of nature that are absolute, permanent, universal, and went in search of moral laws of nature and moral rights of nature. And they did this by examining nature, by which they meant human nature. So America's founding fathers were, if nothing else, great students of human nature. And they believed in certain basic concepts that, for instance, power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. So they took that as a fundamental condition of human nature. On the flip side, however, they also understood that the primary qualities of human nature are reason and free will, and that in order for individuals to be free, you have to be able to liberate the mind, you have to liberate human reason, and you have to restrict the powers of government from preventing them from using their reason. And they did this. They discovered these laws of human nature by extrospecting, by looking out into the world, by observing human beings and the way they act and the passions that move them. But they also introspected. They turned in on themselves. John Adams, for instance, in his diary, it's a fascinating read. He examines his own nature, and he examines the passions which drive him. And then finally, they were all students of history.
Right.
And they examined how and why certain individuals sought power and how and why certain individuals sought freedom. And from this examination of human nature and history, they then induced certain moral laws and rights of nature.
Right. So this leads you to conclude that the Declaration was the existential embodiment of the highest ideals of the Enlightenment. So you're talking about things like nature, reason, rights, constitutionalism. Would you put Newton above somebody like John Locke in terms of having that kind of influence? Or would you, because many times you will hear about John Locke as really being the main person that had a huge influence on the founders. How do you see it?
Well, I think they were both deeply influential. So both John Adams and Thomas Jefferson said that both Newton and Locke were the greatest minds of their own time. And you see evidence, I think, of both Newton and Locke in the Declaration of Independence. So when the Declaration in the first paragraph, for instance, speaks of the laws of nature and of nature's God, this, in effect, is Newton that he's thinking of when he talks about the laws of nature and of nature's God. And then the more famous second paragraph that begins, "We hold these truths to be self-evident," and then he lays out four self-evident truths. The four self-evident truths of the Declaration of Independence are, in effect, a précis of Locke's political principles in the Second Treatise of Government.
Yes, right. Well, that's so interesting, because when you look through the Declaration of Independence, and I want to talk in a little bit more detail about those four truths you just mentioned, but what gave the founders the confidence in what was self-evident? Because you'll find people today who will argue, because they don't believe in the laws of nature and nature's God anymore, that these things are not self-evident and we can do things a different way. We can just declare things are rights. We can talk about the rights government dispenses. We don't have to have any reference to God whatsoever. What was it that gave them that confidence that these truths really were self-evident?
Because in the end, I think they believed that those truths were grounded in an objective reality, right?
Yeah.
So the idea of truth, for instance, and it's interesting, we live today, it is said by the New York Times and by the Oxford English Dictionary, that we live in a post-truth society.
Yes.
This would have, there's probably no concept of the modern world that would have been more foreign to America's founding fathers than this idea of a post-truth society. They believed in capital T truth, and capital T truth for America's founding fathers meant that there was a relationship between certain moral or political ideas, concepts, propositions, and objective reality, the world out there as we experience it. And so, with regard to the major principles of the Revolution and the Declaration of Independence, America's founding fathers went a great distance in trying to validate and demonstrate those principles, not as mere opinions, but as the truth.
Yes, and that's so significant when you're making that observation about this post-truth society we hear about. How can that even be a true statement if we're in a post-truth society? It's gibberish.
Well, it is gibberish, and of course the irony is, for those who hold that position, they hold it as a truth.
Of course, yeah, right.
Right, so it's inherently contradictory.
Of course it is, yeah, and that is why I think it's so disconcerting for a lot of Americans who do understand the brilliance of our founders in setting up our nation and the Declaration of Independence as it was, to look around us and to see the nonsense that is being spewed from so many sectors of society that is undermining what is the nonsense that is being spewed from so many sectors of society that is undermining what is absolute reality and laid out in the Declaration of Independence. And I want to go to that into more detail when we come back. We're going to talk about it. America's Revolutionary Mind is the name of the book. Professor C. Bradley Thompson with us, and we'll return on Janet Mefford Today right after this. Are you among the millions of Americans who feel uncertain when it comes to their health care? Well, right now is the only time of year you can do anything about it. So make the switch to Liberty HealthShare. As a healthcare sharing ministry, Liberty HealthShare is not insurance. So you can pick your program, choose your own doctors and hospitals, and choose when you sign up. They have programs for singles, couples, and families, all with no contracts, starting at only $199 per month. Go to libertyhealthshare.org/JMT. That's libertyhealthshare.org/JMT.
From Provident Films and Affirm Films comes Overcomer, coming to DVD and Blu-ray in time for Christmas.
What are you allowed to define you? When you find your identity in the one who created you, it'll change your whole perspective.
Overcomer. Starring Alex Kendrick and Priscilla Shire. Available now on digital. Coming to Blu-ray and DVD December 17th.
I was afraid. I was scared. I didn't know what to do. Everybody wanted me to have an abortion.
But he was like, you're not ready for another baby. And at that moment, I felt that I'm not going to be able to be a mom to this baby.
These are the voices that a young mom in crisis hears. She wants to make the right choice, but society and those around her are telling her that a preborn baby is not a life. Preborn is the largest provider of free ultrasounds in the country, shining a light into a mother's womb, introducing her to the beautiful life growing inside of her.
She said, "There go the heartbeat." That changed my life just from that ultrasound picture.
Would you join with Preborn and Janet Mefford today to help save 400 babies by the end of the year? For $140, you can sponsor 5 ultrasounds and help save 5 babies from abortion. And now through a match, your gift is doubled. All gifts are tax deductible. To donate, dial 1-855-402-BABY. That's 855-402-2229, or there's a banner at janetmefford.com.
You're listening to Janet Mefford Today. And now, here's Janet.
We are back on Janet Mefford Today. It's good to have you with us. We're talking about America's Revolutionary Mind, the new book from C. Bradley Thompson, professor of political philosophy at Clemson University and the executive director of the Clemson Institute for the Study of Capitalism. And we're talking a lot about the moral revolution that preceded the American Revolution and the Declaration of Independence. And what of that, Professor Thompson, when you're talking about the moral revolution that really preceded 1776, what do we need to know on that score?
I would say the most important thing to know is can be summed up in a concept that was frequently used by American revolutionaries. It's the concept of the American spirit of liberty. They spoke of this spirit of liberty in all of their writings, and that means that it speaks to the moral constitution of American revolutionaries. They had a certain spiritedness, and that spiritedness was based, on the one hand, on certain ideas of liberty, particularly this idea of individual natural rights. And then, secondly, it was more than just an abstract idea. They also believed that to live the American spirit of liberty, you had to jealously guard your freedom and your liberties at all times, at all costs. Yeah. So, I mean, if you think about what the American Revolution was really all about and what triggered it, namely the Stamp Act. Right, the Stamp Act was, for the most part, a relatively small tax. It didn't impose great burdens, certainly relative to the kinds of taxes Americans pay today. And yet, the moment it was passed, the Americans immediately were triggered by it. And they reacted very strongly because they believed that if you give the government an inch, it will take a yard. If you give it a yard, it'll take a mile. And therefore, you must always, at all costs, you must defend your freedom because, as they understood, power never sleeps.
Yep.
Power is like a cancer. It's always growing. And therefore, a free people must always be on guard to protect their freedom.
Boy, were they ever right. We could use them today. And this is interesting. When you go to these 4 self-evident truths outlined in the Declaration of Independence, you say they can be reduced to the words equality, rights, consent, and revolution. So when we're looking at this concept that all men are created equal, we just take that for granted. But how revolutionary was that to just say it that way and to state it in such a confident manner, which, is based in objective reality?
It was massively revolutionary. In the context of the time in which it was written in the 18th century, the world everywhere, but let's take the world from which they had come, namely Old Europe. Old Europe was a place of inequality, of hierarchy, where the social situation into which you were born was the social situation in which you were going to die. The same was true of your father, your son, and your grandson. So this notion, and also these inequalities, of course, were created by and enforced by government. The announcement, however, that all men are created equal turned that whole world upside down on its head. And this idea of equality is it's self-evident, but it's actually quite complicated, right? Because when we look out into the world, when we observe the people in the world around us, there's a sense in which we see inequality, right?
Yes.
We see tall, short, fast, low, strong, weak, intelligent, not so intelligent, et cetera, et cetera. So the question is, in what sense did they mean all men are created equal? Well, I think what they meant was that all individuals have the reason, enough reason, to be self-governing. That is to say, they are equal in their rights to be fully self-governing. That's what equality meant.
Yeah.
Equality didn't mean, for instance, the redistribution of wealth.
Right.
Equality meant all individuals are and should be free.
Yes, right, exactly. And those rights, those unalienable rights, are given to us by our Creator. And then this is the second self-evident truth, that among these unalienable rights are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Why those three and not more? I mean, why not outline we have a right to private property, those sorts of things?
Right. So in every Bill of Rights that was composed during the Revolutionary era, they did include property. The
yeah.
Declaration is the only document of that era that does not include property as a natural right. Now, the fact of the matter, however, is that Thomas Jefferson, throughout his life in his voluminous writings, does include property as a natural right. So either he was omitting it for stylistic reasons and replaced it with this idea of the pursuit of happiness. What's interesting is that the pursuit of happiness, unlike property, does not appear in virtually any other state revolutionary Bill of Rights.
Hmm.
So it's not entirely clear to us why he left property out. It is possible, for instance, that he was concerned about the role of slavery, and of course, one of the great omissions from the Declaration, which was actually Jefferson included it, but was later taken out by the Continental Congress, was Jefferson's condemnation of slavery and the slave trade in his original draft of the Declaration of Independence.
Wow.
So it is possible that, and maybe even likely, that he did not include property because of its complications relative to the issue of slavery.
That's interesting. But when you're talking about the pursuit of happiness, you point out the pursuit of happiness was not seen as a right to happiness, or that government should define happiness for you. Just the pursuit was there. And I wonder how many Americans sometimes need to go back and reread that. Well, I'm supposed to be happy. I'm entitled to happiness. That's not really what the founders were saying at all.
That is absolutely correct. The emphasis should be on the word pursuit. And for the Founding Fathers, there was an intimate relationship between moral virtue and happiness.
Yes.
In fact, they were inseparable. To be happy, one had to invoke and live out certain moral virtues. And this is the difference for Jefferson between what he called real or true happiness and false happiness, right? There are all kinds of things that make us temporarily in the moment happy, right? But true happiness is a long-term satisfaction that comes with accomplishing one's highest values and principles in life. And that is played by moral virtue, right? So virtue is the mechanism by which we achieve happiness.
That's exactly right. Yeah, that's an important point. The third one obviously talks about that governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. That's a really important point. But jumping ahead to the fourth one, there is this reference, which I don't know, is talked about really in the last few years more often than I've seen it talked about in my whole life. But it talks about the right of the people when the form of government becomes destructive of the ends, the people have the right to alter or abolish it and institute a new government. Did they have in view any idea that there might come a specific time in specific circumstances when another revolutionary war would need to be fought? I mean, or was it just kind of a theoretical, hey, if you guys down the road encounter what we encountered, you have the right to fight for yourselves? What was the mindset in putting this into print?
I think it was the latter. So I think it was a general theoretical principle that whenever it says the words are whenever any form of government. So they understood that there may be times in American history going forward, given their own view of human nature, right, which said that power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely.
Yes.
They knew men were not angels. They knew going forward that power would be abused because of human nature. And so there's a certain sense in which the right to revolution is actually a conservative principle.
Yeah.
Because if it's known by all the citizens and the governing class that the people retain this right to revolution, to alter or abolish their government, when the government becomes tyrannical, that provides an incentive, a motive for the government not to become tyrannical.
That's right. But it's very disturbing because you see a lot of the upheaval in our country right now. And there's things going on in the last few years that are very troubling to a lot of Americans. And that is coming up more often. Will there come a time when we would actually need to fight for our country? People remember the Civil War and say we would never want to have a civil war again. But do you foresee that there could be a time where Americans would actually have to consider that option? I mean, it seems unthinkable. But on the other hand, a lot of people worry about it.
Well, it is true. A lot of people do worry about it. And I have to confess that I have seen more articles in the last year about the quote unquote coming civil war in America than I'd ever seen in my entire lifetime. In fact, I'd never seen any articles with titles like that. The sad truth is that America really is becoming divided, and the division is not like the kind of division that took place during antebellum America in the 1850s, leading to a civil war. It's a very different kind of division, and it's not a racial division, it's not a class division, it's an ideological division in many ways.
Yep.
And the sad truth of the matter is that the United States has a kind of ruling elite that genuinely hates what the United States and the principles on which it was founded stand for.
Yep.
Right? They are the opponents of the Declaration of Independence, whereas I think most ordinary everyday Americans genuinely love the principles of the Declaration, and that's absolutely the case for the millions of people around the world who want to come to this country.
I agree. Yeah. Such a good book, America's Revolutionary Mind. Thank you so much, Professor C. Bradley Thompson. We'll be right back. This archived broadcast of Janet Mefford Today is brought to you by Provident Films and Affirm Films movie, Overcomer, coming to the small screen in time for Christmas. Overcomer, available December 17th on digital, Blu-ray, and DVD.
You're listening to Janet Mefford Today. And now, here's Janet.
Oh boy, we're going to have to talk about Chick-fil-A, aren't we? Yes, we are having to talk about Chick-fil-A. This is just such a mind twist to me, because I recall being on the radio back when Dan Cathy, the head of Chick-fil-A, initially made those comments supporting man-woman marriage, which used to be completely non-controversial. But it was just the beginning of this huge culture war, and liberals and pro-LGBT activists just descended upon Chick-fil-A. Christians rushed to Chick-fil-A's defense, especially those who frequent Chick-fil-A. Christians really rallied to the side of Chick-fil-A to support them. to stand with them. And it was not just because they liked the restaurant. It was a cultural moment in which Christians could rally around somebody, somebody who is standing firm on common sense. And I think people really were looking for that moment. And that's part of what I think drove a lot of people to do it. I recall going to the Chick-fil-A Appreciation Day on the day that the gay activists were supposed to storm Chick-fil-A. And it was awesome. Actually, it was the whole restaurant was filled with Christians in Chicago, in the suburbs of Chicago, because that's where I was at the, on that day. But now we're having to do a total 180 on Chick-fil-A. So, you know, I talked recently about the issue of Chick-fil-A changing its donations, and now Chick-fil-A will not be giving any more to groups like the Salvation Army and the Fellowship of Christian Athletes. And we detailed earlier how this has been going on for quite a while. In fact, they have been peeling away. They don't want to fight the culture war. They don't want to lose any business. You had Dan Cathy working with an alderman in Chicago when they wanted to get that first franchise in the city of Chicago. And I knew right away, having come from there, that there's no way you're going to get into Chicago unless you do what they tell you. And so one of the things that came out of that initial meeting was that they would no longer donate to anti-gay groups. So I knew the writing was on the wall right then and there. But now it gets even worse. It gets even worse after this news that they would no longer be giving to the Fellowship of Christian Athletes and the Salvation Army. Even though the Salvation Army, I don't think even could be called anti-gay because they have a whole page on how they welcome LGBT people into their shelters and so forth. So that gets all twisted. But now we find out that Chick-fil-A gave a donation to the Southern Poverty Law Center. And I know as we were all eating turkey and enjoying our Thanksgiving dinners with our families and resting and relaxing a little bit, this news comes down the pike. Southern Poverty Law Center. Are you kidding me? There is no more anti-Christian group that I can name off the top of my head than the Southern Poverty Law Center. They are continually working to destroy Christian groups. It was their hate map on their website that led the homosexual domestic terrorist Floyd Lee Corkins to go to the Family Research Council in 2012 with the intent to commit mass murder for which he was convicted of domestic terrorism. He was inspired by the Southern Poverty Law Center, and now we find out that Chick-fil-A gave a donation to the Southern Poverty Law Center, and we don't even know if they have now vowed whether or not, you know, they'll never give to him again. This is the story from Breitbart. They were really attempting to quell some blowback from conservatives over this previous donation to the SPLC. They point out that the restaurant Giants 2017 990 IRS filing states it not only gave a $2,500 donation to the Southern Poverty Law Center, but also to various pro-abortion and pro-LGBT rights groups. Terrific. So all this time we were supporting Chick-fil-A, they were stabbing us in the back. In a statement to the Daily Caller News Foundation, Chick-fil-A conceded that it made the donation to the left-wing extremist organization, but pointed to Christian groups that it also gave to, including the Salvation Army and the Fellowship of Christian Athletes. Oh, okay. So if you give a donation to the SPLC, but you give a donation to the Fellowship of Christian Athletes, that cancels out your donation to one of the most virulent anti-Christian hate groups on earth? Really? That's not how it works, Chick-fil-A. The statement does not say whether the company will halt any future SPLC donations, as it infamously announced regarding the Christian organizations after a disingenuous pressure campaign from far-left activists. A press representative for Chick-fil-A said the SPLC donation was made by a volunteer member of the Chick-fil-A Foundation Advisory Board. Each volunteer advisor in 2017 was offered the opportunity to recommend a grant recipient. The grants were given to a range of organizations, including Meals on Wheels, Atlanta Mission, etc., etc. So what? You guys donated to the SPLC. The spokesperson then cited Chick-fil-A founder Truett Cathy, whose Christian values, quote, still guide the business today, unquote. Do they now? Well, it would seem to me if you were still using those Christian values to guide your business today, you wouldn't have so many Christians up in arms for feeling stabbed in the back. He famously said, probably the greatest gift that God has given any one of us is the power that we have to change people's lives by what we do. The best run company is the company that is forever thinking about others. What, like Floyd Lee Corkins? Really? It is in this spirit that all donations are made. Unbelievable. However, the statement offers no detail on what positive service the SPLC provides for everyday people. The partisan organization has amassed roughly $500 million in assets through its activism, with millions stashed in offshore accounts. Yeah, they really need more cash, Chick-fil-A. That was a great move. Senator Tom Cotton of Arkansas wrote the IRS last year asking for a review of the SPLC's 501c3 nonprofit status, arguing the SPLC's defining characteristic is to fundraise off defamation. Boy, is that right. It's exactly what the SPLC does. That defamation includes lumping in mainstream conservative groups with neo-Nazis, labeling them hate groups for holding the Christian values Chick-fil-A touts. And then they cite the whole situation at the Family Research Council back in 2012. And we already mentioned that. Now, what are some of the other groups that they're giving to? Ryan Bomberger from the Radiance Foundation fills this in over at the Christian Post. For those defending Chick-fil-A and pretending we have not witnessed their progression of capitulation, he says, the Salvation Army sees it for what it is, stating in a press release, "We're saddened to learn that a corporate partner has felt it necessary to divert funding to other hunger, education, and homelessness organizations." The Salvation Army does all three on a massive scale, but they don't espouse an LGBT ideology. Has their mission drifted to the left? Well, out with organizations that do not espouse a pro-homosexuality ideology, and in with those who do, like Covenant House. Don't let the Catholic Association fool you, though, he says. Covenant House, a homeless shelter for youth, takes pride in its promotion of all things LGBTQ. They even marched in the New York Gay Pride Parade to show their inclusivity cred. Guess the Salvation Army, which admittedly has an issue with partially supporting abortion in cases of rape, incest, and the health of the mother, should have flown some co-opted rainbow colors to keep their hundreds of thousands in funding. Whoops, it looks like Covenant is the new Salvation. Capital S. Chick-fil-A funds the deeply political YWCA as well, a radically pro-abortion and pro-LGBTQ organization that repeatedly partners with Planned Parenthood. Did you know that? So it isn't just the SPLC. They also fund the YWCA. You used to think the YWCA was conservative, didn't you? And even Christian. Yeah, that was long time ago now. Chick-fil-A also funds the D.C.-based New Leadership Council, which identifies as a hub of progressive millennial thought leadership, which exists to support one another along their individual path to a more progressive political and cultural landscape. Chick-fil-A has given a sizable donation as well, $50,000. To the Pace Center for Girls, yet another pro-abortion organization. The education and advocacy group will feature radical pro-abortion feminist Gloria Steinem, the I Had an Abortion activist who declared that birthing children is the fundamental cause of climate change. And she will be the keynote speaker for the upcoming Girls Summit. Oh, sweet. Or how about Usher's new look? R&B star Usher Raymond IV's liberal nonprofit, the group's Disruptifier Summit, I guess it's called something like that, is all about progressive community organizing on pivotal social issues. And Chick-fil-A funds it. $38,700 in 2017. Oh, they also give tens of thousands to Chris 180. This is $27,000 in 2017, $25,000 in 2019, which is a pro-LGBT behavioral health and child welfare service agency. Terrific. And the organization boasts of being awarded the leader in supporting and serving LGBT families and youth from the Human Rights Campaign Foundation. You guys know who they are. Terrific. That's great, Chick-fil-A. Well, I hope that the LGBT activists nationwide will keep you afloat and they will continue to make everything right as you have a little rat dangling over your face, like the end of 1984. He finally loved Big Brother. Or maybe, just maybe, they'll wake up and realize they're in the process of destroying everything that Truett Cathy spent so many years trying to build. It's disgraceful. We're going to come back. Stay with us. A mother's womb has now become the unsafest place in America, with abortion being the leading cause of death and babies being aborted up to term in some states.
I was afraid. I was scared. I didn't know what to do. Everybody wanted me to have an abortion.
Preborn is the largest provider of free ultrasounds in the country, helping moms choose life. You see, when a mom in crisis sees her baby on ultrasound and hears the heartbeat, she's 80% more likely to choose life for her baby.
She did let me hear the heartbeat, and I was like, wow, it's something like living inside of me. It was a beautiful thing to hear.
Would you join with Preborn and Janet Mefford today and help save 400 babies by the end of this year? For $140, you can sponsor 5 ultrasounds. And now through a match, your tax-deductible gift is doubled, saving 10 babies' lives. To donate, dial 855-402-BABY. That's 855-402-2229. Or there's a banner to click at janetmefford.com.
From Provident Films and Affirm Films comes Overcomer, coming to DVD and Blu-ray in time for Christmas.
What have you allowed to define you? When you find your identity in the one who created you, it'll change your whole perspective.
Overcomer, starring Alex Kendrick and Priscilla Shire. Available now on digital. Coming to Blu-ray and DVD December 17th.
Are you among the millions of Americans who feel uncertain when it comes to their healthcare? Well, right now is the only time of year you can do anything about it. So make the switch to Liberty HealthShare. As a healthcare sharing ministry, Liberty HealthShare is not insurance. So you can pick your program, choose your own doctors and hospitals, and choose when you sign up. They have programs for singles, couples, and families, all with no contracts, starting at only $199 per month. Go to libertyhealthshare.org/JMT. That's libertyhealthshare.org/JMT.
This is Janet Mefford Today. And now, here's your host, Janet Mefford.
Welcome back. Great to have you with us again. This hour of Janet Mefford Today is brought to you by Provident Films and Affirm Films movie Overcomer, coming to the small screen in time for Christmas. Overcomer, available December 17th on digital, Blu-ray, and DVD. All right, I am talking about some cultural war issues. In particular, I was opining a bit on Chick-fil-A's 180. I mean, my head is spinning. I think a lot of Christians in this country simply are finding themselves flabbergasted by the betrayal, by the knife in the back at two Chick-fil-A. You know, who do you, and here's what's interesting to me. You have a lot of these liberal activists who are out there on social media trying to say, well, you Christians shouldn't put your faith in corporate America. You know, I don't think Christians ever did put their faith in corporate America. That's not what it was about. For some people, it was simply that they liked going to a restaurant that closed on Sundays, was going against the cultural norms, trying to be a Christian company, trying to be pro-family, had a head who was all for marriage and was not afraid to say so until he was. And it was about having somebody to rally around at a time when the pro-LGBT radical, you know, sexual activists are just taking everybody into their cobweb. And there are very, very few people who are brave enough to stand up to them. And I think Christians really appreciated that Chick-fil-A, to whatever degree, was willing to say, no, we're not going to back away from believing in marriage. But in fact, all they've done is back away. So, you know, I'm not for vindictiveness in any way, shape or form, but I think what's good for the goose is good for the gander. And if you were willing to stand up for marriage and take your lumps, then you need to be willing to take your lumps when you support sexual radicals and pro-abortion organizations. So it goes both ways. And it doesn't have anything to do with putting your faith and trust in a company. It has to do with Christians really dying to support somebody who has a spine in corporate America. And I think this would be a lovely time for somebody else to fill that gap. Because you know what? These activists can be pushed back. That's what I think very few Christians really understand. They can be pushed back. It's like the bully in the schoolyard. I know it's kind of a time-worn cliche, but it really is the same principle. If you are out in the schoolyard and there is a bully and he's pushing all the kids and he's stealing the milk money and all the rest, lots of kids will be too intimidated to stand up to the bully. But if you go up to the bully, and not going up to the bully initially, but if the bully comes to you, shoves you to the ground, steals your lunch money, kicks you, physically assaults you, and at some point you say, I'm not going to take it. I'm not going to put up with this. I don't have to be physically assaulted by this crazy person. And maybe you give a shove back. Maybe you hit the kid in the face. I'm not advocating violence, but we know how it is when you're in the schoolyard. And you have to stand up for yourself. And there is something about standing up for yourself that sometimes will make the bully walk away. You're no easy, you know, victim here. I'm not going to be able to really pick on you the way I could pick on that guy over there who won't fight back. There is a really fundamental human principle at work, and it's just interesting to see how it's all gone down. So we'll keep you posted on that. All right, on to other things. This is an interesting story as well. And it's actually two stories, if I can get these in very carefully and very quickly. There is a story out of Lancaster, New York. Christian News Network reported on this initially. And it has to do with this little girl who wanted to wrestle. She wanted to be on the wrestling team. And it ended up in a really, really bad way. I don't want to ruin the story, but let's go to this report from WKBW. Cut one.
12-year-old Trista Blaze from Lancaster has a dream to wrestle. She's good, really good. She even won an Eagle, the highest award in a national competition.
To wrestle on the boys' team and the girls' team.
But despite competitively wrestling with boys her entire life, Trista isn't allowed to wrestle for Lancaster High School's JV team. The school doctor refuses to give her approval. She can't even wrestle modified.
I just can't wrestle, basically, on the team. Because I'm a girl.
This is not fair just because she's a girl. And this is the only explanation I could come up with. If she was a boy, she'd be on the team already.
Are these your workouts?
Trista passed the two-state mandated test that would allow her to be on the JV team. One determines her body's maturity, and the other is a series of physical tests, like push-ups and pull-ups. But
the school doctor said no. I asked him for an explanation. He didn't give me one.
I'm sorry, but is this not common sense why you shouldn't have little girls in spandex wrestling boys in spandex? Is this really that hard for people to figure out? Not everything is about anything boys can do, girls can do better. I'm sure this girl is a fine wrestler, but I think we're missing the bigger picture. Here's the rest of the report. Cut to.
Trista's mom, Danielle, says a boy in Trista's seventh grade class also passed both tests. He's on the JV team, but Trista has to take an extra step.
Now she has to go through this panel of the school doctor, Trista's primary, and a gym teacher.
The gym teacher and the school doctor still said no.
And their excuse on this piece of paper I picked up today was muscle mass used with my sister 12 years ago.
Trista's in the exact same situation her aunt was over a decade ago, dealing with the same school doctor at Lancaster High School. Her aunt's the whole reason Trista even started wrestling.
My aunt got me into it, and I just found it really cool and fun.
Trista's aunt ended up on the boys' wrestling team by appealing the school doctor's decision. It took a year. That's why Trista and her mom both hope it doesn't come to that.
I'm upset. And I'll keep fighting for her.
That I could just wrestle on the team.
That's all you want.
Yeah.
That's all she wants is to be on the wrestling team. Well, here's the update. The school board has now voted to terminate the contract of that district pediatrician for declining to clear her to join the boys' wrestling team. So here's a situation where you have presumably a feminist mother and a little girl who's following suit. Girls should be able to do anything and everything that boys do, even in competitive sports. Fine, you can believe that. The doctor gets fired for saying no, girls shouldn't be wrestling boys. Yeah, that's where we are. Now, on the other end of the spectrum, this is the opposite. Let's talk about a school district in Downey, California. The pro-family group Mass Resistance is out with a story talking about how they stormed the local school board there over a really disgusting radical sexual education curriculum. It's kind of the same as what we've been talking about in Austin, and it's popping up all over the place. But this is called the Teen Talk curriculum. They have, for example, a collection of radical LGBT and pro-abortion groups as resources for instructors and students, and places where children can confidentially get birth control and abortions. They have propaganda under a values clarification section of the curriculum to change children's sense of right and wrong and to indoctrinate them in the sexual radicals' value system. There is also a compendium of radical LGBT propaganda that is being drilled into students as fact under the heading of gender and sexual identity, but in fact it is unscientific and psychologically destructive. We can presume that's the transgender nonsense. Then you have under sexuality, graphic and reckless sexual depictions and discussions that could likely severely warp a child's sexual and emotional development. So one of the Mass Resistance organizers, Arthur Schopper, spoke in front of this school board. I want you to listen to a little bit of this. This is cut three.
We have gone to every single one of the seven districts that you represent. Every person that we show this curriculum to, they are outraged, they are disgusted, they want it gone. Mr. Morris, One of the residents of your district said, I'll run against Mr. Morris if he doesn't repeal this curriculum. You responded to the needs of this community. It is inexcusable for you to say, well, we didn't have a choice. There are multiple curricula you could have chosen. There was a Positive Prevention Plus, the HEART curriculum that Mr. Helbo put together. There were others. Mr. Prosper himself said that. It is inexcusable. We didn't have a choice for this. There were other choices you could have made. This is probably the worst. Something based on Planned Parenthood and Alfred Kinsey's research is inexcusable. This is a sexually explicit, medically inaccurate, totally inappropriate curriculum. It pushes a homosexual and transgender agenda. It teaches about sexual rights. It teaches kids about putting on condoms, making life-changing decisions without parental input. This is inexcusable.
Now, why do those two stories kind of go back to back? Well, in one case, the parents rule and get the doctor fired when they don't like where the doctor stands on the gender issue. And in the case of Downey, California, the school board can outwardly just completely ignore the parents. You have all these parents. This is apparently a mainly Hispanic district, but conservative. And these parents are rising up and they're saying, why did you put this Planned Parenthood sex curriculum in the schools? And you didn't even solicit our input. You didn't even solicit any of our, you know, any of our ideas or anything. You don't care anything about the parents. So in one case, the parents rule completely as long as the agenda is feminist and liberal. But in the other case, if you have concerned parents and they're conservative, then they're completely ignored. Is that how it works in public education in the United States now? Apparently so, at least in some locations. But I think the warning here is for all parents to stay informed and stay involved in your child's life. And I'm not just talking about whether or not your child is in a public school, but also these days, even if your child is in a private school or a Christian school, you just can't take it for granted anymore that where you send your child to school is going to be just fine based on some sorts of assumptions you might have had in the past. You have to be vigilant and pray for your children. It's never been more important. We've got to leave it there. Thank you a lot for being with us here on Janet Mefford today. Always a pleasure to be with you. God bless you, and we will see you next time.